A bull market that is splitting, capital on the move. The new map of global equities in 2026 and the testing ground of the Korean stock market. For a while, global equities moved on what was essentially a single question. When will interest rates come down, and when will that signal push stocks higher again? But the market in 2026 is no longer that simple. Investors no longer look only at the direction of rates. They also look at which countries' growth rates will hold up longer, which industries' large-scale investments will actually translate into profits, and which markets can maintain trust while withstanding policy changes and currency shocks. Even within the same technology sector, it is no longer unusual to see completely different valuations depending on the country, currency, supply chain, and policy environment. This change is not merely an expansion of volatility. It is a sign that the market's reference point itself is changing. If the bull markets of the past were a broad wave of liquidity, today's market is closer to a channel of selection. Capital is moving more narrowly and more quickly, and it has begun to draw a hard line between stocks that rose on expectations alone and those that prove themselves through earnings. In this environment, the Korean stock market is especially important. It sits at the center of the global investment flow around semiconductors and AI, while also being heavily influenced by domestic variables such as exchange rates, interest rates, policy, and corporate governance. In other words, the Korean stock market is now both a compressed version and an amplified version of the changes in global equities. The opportunities are large, and so is the volatility. The era of everything rising together is over. Now the market prices in each country's own story. The most accurate word to describe global equities in 2026 is divergence. Looking only at the world economy as a whole, this is not yet a situation that calls for collapse. Growth is holding on at the boundary between slowdown and recovery, and consumption and investment are continuing, albeit with regional differences. The problem is that this resilience does not work in the same way across all markets. The United States is still seen as a relatively solid pillar. Europe remains burdened by weak growth alongside industrial competitiveness and energy cost problems. Japan stands on the variable of a transition away from a long-standing monetary policy regime, and emerging markets are seeing both growth premiums and sensitivity to external capital flows come into focus. In this environment, it is no longer possible to explain the market simply by saying global equities are rising. Even if the same sector rises on the same day, the rise in one market may come from upward earnings revisions, while the rise in another may come from policy expectations. In some places, currency moves support stocks. In others, currency moves shake foreign investor flows and limit gains. For investors, what matters is not the average but the context. Country-specific growth paths, the speed of monetary policy, fiscal capacity, industrial structure, political calendars, and similar factors are now all being attached to stock price tags. In particular, in a diverging market like this, even the definition of a good market changes. It is not simply the market that rose the most, but the market where the reason for the rise is clear that lasts longer. Depending on whether prices rose because earnings improved, because policy expectations ran ahead, or because capital inflows are structural rather than temporary, even the same rally can have a completely different character. The first principle for reading global equities right now is this: use the large term global, but bring actual judgment down to each country's own story. AI mania, Act 2. The market is moving from an expectations-driven phase to an earnings-driven phase. AI remains the central narrative of the market. But in 2026, the mood has clearly changed. Previously, many stocks could rise together simply on the sweeping story that AI will change the future. Now, what matters more is who makes money first. The market is no longer viewing AI as a single theme, but is breaking it down into multiple profit models. The valuation criteria have diverged for companies that build models, platforms that attach services, cloud firms that provide infrastructure, foundries that manufacture chips, companies that supply memory, and infrastructure firms responsible for power, cooling, and facilities. The core of this shift is the tension between capital expenditure and profitability. Competition in the AI era costs far more than many expected. Data centers, high-performance semiconductors, networks, power infrastructure, and talent acquisition all require capital. For a while, the market interpreted these costs generously as investments to secure the future. But as time passed, a question emerged: when, and in what form, will this massive spending come back as profits? If monetization is slower than expected, high valuations can be shaken easily. On the other hand, companies that deliver earnings above the market's expectations can be re-rated even within the same AI theme. That is why the AI market in 2026 is both more difficult and, in some ways, healthier. Prices that once moved on expectations alone have begun reconnecting with real variables such as earnings, cash flow, market share, and supply capacity. In this process, leadership shifts are also appearing. While platforms and service companies were at the center of the narrative for a time, attention is now moving towards semiconductor manufacturing, memory, equipment, and power/infrastructure. This does not mean AI is fading. It means AI has become more industrially deep. The market is no longer asking, is it AI or not? It is asking, where in the AI value chain do actual profits break out first? This question is likely to become a key inflection point for equities over the next several years. Until AI translates into broad productivity gains, controversy over cost burdens will recur, and in the meantime, the market will continue to reprice as it moves between expectations and earnings. Ultimately, the leaders of the next bull market are likely to be not the companies with the most dazzling stories, but the ones that prove themselves first in numbers. The age of rates is not over. What matters more is the speed gap in policy and the waves of currency moves. It is not accurate to say that the market in 2026 cares less about interest rates. The market still watches rates closely. But now, rather than the direction of rates, it is more sensitive to the speed gap in policy and the transmission path. Even in the same inflation cooling phase, some countries have room to adjust rates quickly, while others cannot move easily because of currency and financial stability concerns. And even at the same policy rate level, the impact on the stock market can vary greatly depending on long-term yields, currency values, capital flows, and debt structures. This shift demands a new kind of interpretive ability from investors. In the past, a relatively simple formula often worked. When rate cut expectations emerged, growth stocks rose. When rate hike fears grew, growth stocks came under pressure. Now that formula is only partially correct. Even if rate cut expectations exist, stocks may respond only modestly if recession fears rise at the same time. Conversely, even if rate cuts are delayed, the market can hold up if earnings improve clearly. In the end, the stock market now moves by reading not the rate figure itself, but what that country is more worried about right now. Whether the primary concern is inflation, growth, exchange rates, or financial stability has become the starting point of market interpretation. Exchange rates have returned to the foreground in this process. In a globally diverging market, currencies are not just background variables. They are a central axis that can simultaneously shake foreign investor flows, import prices, corporate earnings, capital inflows and outflows, and policy room. In particular, in open economies, the direction of exchange rates often changes the felt intensity of index performance. Even if an index is rising, a large currency depreciation can leave overseas investors with lower than expected returns. Conversely, even if index gains look modest, stable exchange rates can sustain capital inflows. In the end, the rate variable in 2026 cannot be sufficiently explained by the headline, cut or hold. One must also examine which central bank is moving for what reason and how slowly or quickly, and what ripple effects that choice creates in currencies and capital flows. That is one reason the market feels difficult, but it is also why opportunities exist. The era when everyone looked at the same signal has ended, which means those who read policy speed differentials first can get a step ahead. The return of tariffs, supply chains, and exchange rates. Geopolitics is once again setting stock price tags. For a while, geopolitics was treated in the market like a news variable that caused a brief reaction when an incident broke out. Now the situation is different. Geopolitics has returned as a structural variable in corporate valuation. Tariffs, export controls, sanctions, supply chain restructuring, and strategic industrial policy no longer exist only in policy documents. They are directly reflected in companies' revenue outlooks, cost structures, investment plans, and even valuation premiums and discounts. The market now views geopolitics less as an event and more as a system of costs and opportunities. This shift matters because it widens the gap not only across industries but at the company level. Even within the same manufacturing sector, companies are valued very differently depending on where production bases are located, how diversified their parts procurement networks are, how regionally dispersed their major customers are, and how complete their localization strategies are. Companies that have reduced supply chain risk receive a premium in an age of uncertainty. By contrast, companies overly dependent on a specific region or policy environment can be easily discounted even if their earnings hold up. This is no longer an era where if the industry is good, everything in it is good. It is an era where, even within the same industry, the key competitive advantage is who can withstand geopolitical shocks. Exchange rates also become more powerful as they interact with geopolitics. Trade conflicts and supply chain changes often lead to currency volatility, and that currency volatility in turn changes the profit and loss structures of exporters, importers, and domestic demand companies. In phases where policy, exchange rates, costs, and demand all move at once, the old simple logic of sector rotation is no longer enough. Even among exporters, for example, the outlook can differ completely between companies benefiting from currency tailwinds and those facing higher raw material burdens. So, in 2026, if you look at geopolitics only as a risk factor, you miss too much. Geopolitics is also a criterion for selection. Where a company builds factories, where it raises capital, which markets it sells into, and what regulatory environment it is exposed to are all now interpreted as indicators of corporate resilience. In the end, the market is asking one question: can this company maintain supply and earnings when the next shock arrives? Increasingly, the price tag on a stock is being determined by the answer to that question. Capital that used to look only at the US is moving. But that does not mean the American era is over. One of the striking scenes in the 2026 market is capital rotation. Money that had long been concentrated in the center of global investors' portfolios, the United States, and especially large-cap technology stocks, has begun to flow in part toward other regions and sectors. This is less a simple exit than a portfolio reallocation. U.S. large caps rose so much that relative valuation burdens increased, and debate over AI investment costs also grew, prompting investors to broaden the sources of returns. That is why attention is spreading to certain sectors in Europe, Japan, semiconductor-related markets in Asia, and some emerging markets. But it would be an exaggeration to interpret this trend immediately as the end of the American era. The U.S. market still has strong power to attract global capital on the basis of deep liquidity, a powerful corporate ecosystem, technological innovation, and capital market infrastructure. In many cases, capital is not abandoning the U.S. but moving by adjusting U.S. weights. In other words, this looks less like a complete replacement from the U.S. to non-U.S. markets and more like a peripheral expansion of a U.S.-centered portfolio. That distinction is important. The former is a narrative of structural collapse. The latter is a narrative of normal rotation and diversification. What makes this capital movement interesting is that the market is now exploring the terrain of returns more broadly. Even if a tech-led market continues, opportunities may emerge around it in areas that were relatively less in focus: industrials, financials, commodities, infrastructure, defense, and electric power. Regionally as well, re-ratings may occur not only in U.S. large-cap growth stocks but also in markets benefiting from policy change and industrial restructuring. This gives investors more choices, but it also demands more study. It is no longer a market where one can simply ride a single direction. Ultimately, the capital movement in 2026 is less a negative signal than a sign of market maturation. As leadership broadens, the market can reduce dependence on one or two stocks and improve resilience to shocks. That process, however, is not smooth. In a phase of rotation, corrections in existing leaders overlap with a search for new leaders, increasing volatility. That is why the right stance now is not to conclude America is over or we must go back only to America, but to calmly read why capital is moving and how sustainable that move is. The Korean stock market, from an AI beneficiary market to a market of institutional experiment. Both opportunity and limitation are growing at the same time. The Korean stock market is a market that must be discussed independently when talking about global equities in 2026. The reason is clear. Korea is deeply connected to the core components and memory supply chain of the AI era, so it is highly likely to benefit directly from the expansion of global technology investment. At the same time, it is also heavily affected by variables such as exchange rates, interest rates, external dependence, foreign investor flows, and corporate governance issues. In other words, it is a typical high beta market that shows strong upside when global tailwinds arrive and large swings when external shocks hit. Semiconductors, in particular, are the key to understanding the Korean stock market. As long as competition over AI infrastructure continues, interest in high-performance memory and related equipment and materials is unlikely to fade easily. This is clearly an opportunity for the Korean market. But opportunity does not automatically lead to a re-rating. The Korean stock market has long repeatedly experienced a gap between earnings and stock prices, a recurring discount problem. Even when corporate competitiveness is high, if the discount rate attached to the market as a whole is elevated, the upside of stock prices can be capped easily. At this point, the Korean market in 2026 becomes not just an industry cycle market, but a testing ground for institutions and trust. Exchange rates and policy also remain important variables. Because Korea is an open economy, it is strongly affected by global rates, dollar movements, and changes in the trade environment. Even if inflation appears to be stabilizing, policy decisions can become complicated if volatility in the won increases. The market does not move according to a simplistic formula such as inflation has come down, so cut rates. It must weigh external stability, household debt, financial market confidence, and capital flows together. For this reason, the Korean market often shows a somewhat complex face in which good news and cautious policy signals appear at the same time. Meanwhile, the variable that can raise the Korean market's medium to long-term attractiveness is institutional reform. Changes such as corporate value-up initiatives, expanded shareholder returns, stronger disclosure credibility, and better protections for minority shareholders may not lift stock prices explosively, like a short-term theme, but they can form the foundation for lowering the discount rate of the market as a whole. Ultimately, the future of the Korean stock market will not be determined only by a good semiconductor cycle. On top of a good cycle, how much institutional trust is built may determine the scale of a re-rating. That is why the Korean stock market is now in a very interesting position. It is a market that can benefit from the core global equity theme of AI at the closest range, while at the same time being one where structural reform and policy consistency determine the sustainability of performance. Put simply, it is a car that can run fast, but one that is highly sensitive to road conditions. Unless this characteristic is understood, neither the strength nor the corrections of the Korean market can be read without distortion. The next bull market will be made not by fashionable stocks, but by companies that endure. The investment grammar of 2026 to 2030. The most important shift when looking ahead to the next 3 to 5 years of equities is the change in valuation criteria. The market still likes new technologies and growth narratives, but the way it accepts those narratives is changing. What matters much more now is not simply what a company does, but what cost structure it operates with, how stably it can generate cash flow, and whether it can endure policy changes and supply chain shocks. Put another way, the key word of the next bull market is not glamour but durability. This shift becomes clearer through multiple scenarios. In an optimistic scenario, AI investment is translated into real productivity gains, corporate earnings show the effect in hard numbers and volatility in rates, and exchange rates gradually declines. If that happens, today's narrow leadership could broaden into industrials, financials, healthcare, and non-US markets, creating a healthier bull market. In that case, the Korean stock market could see a wider re-rating as semiconductors, export recovery, and expectations for institutional reform align. There is also a clear scenario to be cautious about. If factors such as a renewed rise in energy prices, a re-escalation of trade conflict, slower than expected AI monetization, and sharp currency swings overlap, then highly valued growth stocks could face stronger correction pressure first. In that case, the market may shift rapidly from story to cash flow, and companies with heavy debt burdens or weak profitability could be shaken first. In markets like Korea, which are sensitive to external capital flows, the amplitude of such shocks may become even larger. Ultimately, the investment grammar of 2026 to 2030 needs to move one step beyond simple theme chasing. It is not enough to look only at which industry is promising. One must also look at who controls costs well within that industry, who manages supply chains stably, who adapts quickly to policy changes, and who builds trust with shareholders and the market. The market is becoming increasingly cold-blooded. It likes expectations, but it does not tolerate them for long. In that sense, the winners going forward may differ from the most popular companies. Rather, companies that consistently generate profits, balance investment and return, and can continue operating even in crises are likely to receive higher valuations over time. The next bull market can certainly come, but that bull market will be far more selective than the previous one. And the standards for that selection have already begun to reveal themselves in the 2026 market. What remains at the end of the crossroads? The global equity market in 2026 is still a market of opportunity. But that opportunity is no longer broad and flat as before. Only by looking together at each country's growth path and policy speed, the direction of exchange rates, the stability of supply chains, the recoverability of AI investment costs, and institutional credibility, can one finally see the market's direction. In short, today's market is no longer asking what will rise, but rather, what can survive and keep rising? The Korean stock market is one of the places where this question appears most clearly. It stands at the center of global technology investment flows, while the quality of domestic institutions and policy determines the sustainability of performance. That is why the Korean market is difficult. But that is also exactly why it is attractive. When a good cycle arrives, it can jump sharply, and as institutional trust accumulates, the quality of that rise can also change. The most realistic way to read the current market is not through fixed optimism or pessimism, but by understanding the structure of divergence and identifying the markets and companies that have the strength to endure. 2026 is the year that training begins in earnest.